You are listening to the Huddle Up Podcast, part of the USA Today Podcast Network. I'm your host, Corey Bonini, and we're here to talk fantasy football for the 2018 NFL season. And welcome to week 7 of the fantasy football season. Ryan Bonini joins me this week after missing last week due to an illness. So how are you feeling today, Ryan?
Well, considering I was questionable going into about 15 minutes ago, I'm going to just suck it up, have to ice down, take some extra Gatorade after this one. But beyond that, I'm feeling pretty good. That 0-4 team I was complaining about 2 weeks ago has won two straight. It's a league over at realitysportsonline.com, my favorite dynasty league. And man, I'm looking to win another one. Three in a row. Let's get the hat trick.
Go for it, man. Hey, go for it. A couple of years ago, I took a 2-5 team, made one trade, won the championship. I mean, that's probably like what I would think was my favorite fantasy moment ever. That was one of the most fulfilling trades I've ever worked before. So I'm glad that you were able to play through the questionable tag. You were a game time decision, you said. So it's good to see that you're out here on the field. We'll dive right into this week. We're going to talk about some wide receiver problems with the Atlanta Falcons. Calvin Ridley's banged up. We have Mohamed Sanu injured. We have a fairly tough matchup on paper with the Giants. They've been up and down in terms of what they've given up. Some of it's matchup driven. How do you see this one playing out? And I'm focusing personally on Austin Hooper's role in the last couple of weeks. Now we have these banged up receivers. Does he continue with a third straight strong game?
I think he does. I think he's a big piece this weekend, close to 70 plus yards, maybe another score. Julio Jones, of course, is like two wide receivers on the field. Well, two wide receivers that couldn't find the end zone on the field, but two wide receivers on the field nonetheless. So he's as good as ever. I think Calvin Ridley is probably going to tough this one out. Big problem there is this is a guy that uses his wheels. That ankle injury is a little bit concerning to me. Sanu's a little bit more iffy in my opinion right now, but they need to get the running backs more involved in the passing game. Tevin Coleman has just 13 catches this year. It's an absolute sin by the coaching staff.
Yeah, I can't argue that. And you've seen Ito Smith come in the last 3 weeks, a touchdown each game, but he's doing nothing else. That's the problem. If you're in a league where yardage is important and it's not extremely dependent on touchdowns, he is one of the worst tease type players, because what do you do there? You're getting almost nothing yardage wise, 40 or 50 yards combined offense from him. But finding the end zone's obviously nice. Can you count on that every week? Hard to say. I'm not sure I'm excited about playing him this week. Well, Devonta Freeman, you know, is on injured reserve. That means Ito Smith has at least a fighting chance of seeing, I would say, maybe 40% of the touches offensively, and that's probably on the high end of things. For as much as I generally don't like to agree with you, I have to agree on the Hooper situation there. And Julio Jones is so interesting to me. You see everybody, you know, like you just pointed out there with the lack of touchdown commentary, everybody talks like he's having such a bad year. He's on pace for 1,800 plus receiving yards and 117 catches.
That would be nice to throw a touchdown or two in there, too.
Yeah, it would, but that's an awesome, I mean, if you're a PPR, that's an awesome season. I don't think people should be as negative about his outlook as they have been. So I'm a little worried about Matt Ryan starting him. He's been pretty good. He's been really good in every game but two, and as a matter of fact, but I'm thinking somewhere in the 20 to 23 point range this week would, I hate to say, be optimistic, but it almost feels that way.
Could see a possible shootout again, man. That Atlanta defense is bad. I have no fears with Ryan right now. He continues as a top five quarterback, in my opinion. But the running game and using the running back, using Coleman the way he needs to be used. This guy is a multi-dimensional threat. You're hardly utilizing him. This offense could be so much better. They just can't ever seem to get everything clicking at the same time.
Well, terrible play calling and a number of issues, but when the defense is that bad and they get behind, they have to give up the run. Coleman is good in the passing game, so involving him out of the backfield would make a lot of sense. Another backfield here. In fact, we have a couple of backfields in a row I'd like to talk about, but this one is high on the list with Latavius Murray and Dalvin Cook. Cook returned to practice yesterday. Today he left early during the media portion. The coaching staff is saying that it wasn't anything to be alarmed about. I have a hard time believing that when you have a player who's missed three of the last four games with a hamstring injury. Not optimistic about his chances of playing this week. Murray's coming off a monster game, but it was against a terrible run defense. How much stock do you put into that? I personally am playing him somewhere around the RB2 territory in a standard scoring format. PPR, maybe he creeps into that flex territory, and that'd probably only be if Cook is out.
Well, the smart money right now is off of what Murray did last week, and with Cook still not being truly 100% from last year with the ACL injury and now with the hamstring injury that he's dealt with, he's your young asset for a long time. You have to sit him down. You have to be smart about it. Even if he did play, I think it would be an 80-20 type split in Murray's favor. It just doesn't make sense right now. This is still a very solid team. They've got their eyes on the playoffs down the road. There's no reason at all to set themselves back by having Cook less than 100% a month from now. If it means sitting him during that time, be smart about it, Minnesota. Be very smart and let Murray carry the load in the meantime. Where would I play him? He's a flex play to me. The floor is low. The ceiling is mid-range. And his odds of hitting either one are about the same at a 50-50 realm, in my opinion.
Miami, Detroit. Detroit comes off the bye, had looked okay at times against the run before this game. Frank Gore has looked pretty good in the last couple weeks, gaining a lot more of the workload. Kenyon Drake fumbled on the goal line. Luckily for Miami, it didn't cost them the win in the end. But you have to think that at least weighs in the coaching staff's minds a little bit when you're talking about this work split. I couldn't help but notice that Frank Gore, and I guess he's allowed to be since he's like 107, but he looked tired at the end of that drive. When they pulled him out and put Drake in before that fumble, Gore looked like he had all he could do to get off the field. And that makes me worried. Like, we're midway through the season, basically. Where are we at in the next couple weeks if this turns into a heavier Gore-favored workload? I get a little fearful that he can hold up there. But in the short term, do you think that was a blip? Are we going to see this continue? Or where would you say the smart money is on how this backfield shakes out?
Wow. 35 years old. Not that old, Corey. Not that old. But he's also getting stronger. 5.3 yards, 6.7 yards per carry the last two games. In the last three, he's got 38 carries, the Drake's 21. Gore is still the better true running back of these two. Drake is the better all-around athlete, the more multidimensional back at this point. But the team has totally used Drake poorly all season, as we've talked about here a couple of times so far. Either way, Gore's playing great. It's ridiculous for a 35-year-old with the miles that man has on his legs to still be churning like he is. He should be tired. He's tired from the last 15 years. But this is going to be a hot hand gameplay type situation. And that scares me because dependability going into a week, you just don't know which way it's going to play out. Worst case scenario, I think these guys are both low-end flex plays. Bye weeks, of course, are upon us and will only get worse. Down the stretch, I'd say 64 split on running duties. Gore favored in that. Drake favored in the passing game, both against Detroit. I'd play Gore as no less than a 2 and Drake is no less than a 3.
I'm a little interested in seeing how they would fare if the workload between the 20s was almost exclusively Gore. Passing down was almost exclusively Drake. Drake comes in for the occasional spell and is the home run style back. That's personally where I see him at his best. I have a hard time viewing him as a bell cow style back. I just don't think that's his makeup. I don't think that Miami also wants that to happen, but they've almost felt like you were saying about not using him right. It almost feels like they were trying to jam a square peg into a round hole at times this year. Maybe what they've finally learned here is that this is the way to do it. And with Brock Osweiler starting at quarterback, even though he did have what was a pretty impressive fantasy game, I'll give him credit, it really was an impressive fantasy game. He still turned it over 2 times through the air. He's still Brock Osweiler. I mean, how long do we pretend that that one isn't going to...
Hey, he's 3-0 against the Bears, man. Give him some credit.
Yeah, he's undefeated in overtime in his career. I think that's the best stat I've ever seen. Anyway, well, whatever. We could... So, San Francisco's running back situations. One more here that's interesting to me. Raheem Mostert comes in. Alfred Morris, if you looked around Twitter, or you happen to be a victim of Alfred Morris not seeing the ball in week 6, you'll understand what I'm talking about. It was unfortunate. I hate to toot my own horn here, but I did say early in the week, before any of that even was up for discussion, that Mostert played pretty well prior to having some ball security issues, and he was explosive. And I was a little surprised after the Week 5 game that people weren't higher on him. I thought there was a reasonable chance that he could see the ball more in Week 6. Was he better than I expected? Yeah, he was. But I was also not in any way expecting Matt Breida to be on the field. And now that Breida's, one, he's always
tough,
hurt,
man.
And two,
he's tough.
He's always hurt, but he's always playing through injury. That really makes me reevaluate the situation. When you have Alfred Morris plodding along for 3.5 yards, 4.1 yards, somewhere in that range, and you have Mostert coming out ripping off runs of 8, 10, 12, 14 yards left and right, like that is normal for him. I have a hard time seeing how this offense could possibly get away from that.
I cut Alfred Morris this week, Corey. He gave me a zero last week.
I don't blame you. I really don't.
Badly.
Well, and in fairness, though, Kyle Shanahan does say that Mostert didn't outright take the job from him, and this is not a situation where Morris was demoted, per se.
But that's what makes it worse.
But do you believe that? I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a second.
Regardless, that's what makes it worse. Now you have a third head to this situation. Breida's still not 100%, but he's toughing it out. He's really impressed me this year. I thought he was just a flash in the pan last year, but he's really impressed me this year. The guy's going to be a player in the league for a while. But Mozart versus Morris, do you really want to own either one of them?
Yes.
No, not.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so you just told me you cut Alfred Morris on your team. So you went into this season, or whenever you picked him up, probably off the wire, maybe after the injury to Jared McKinnon.
Keeper league. Tucked him away. Keeper league. Okay, so thinking he'd get an opportunity this year.
There you go. So you thought for an even longer period of time that Alfred Morris would be a thing again, and he re-enters the Kyle Shanahan offense where, myself included, thought there was a chance that could be the deciding factor in making him a thing again. Turns out, no, he just was an overachiever earlier in his career, and he's a plodding back who's never going to be a thing again. And that's where I'm going with this, where I'm saying it's coach speak from Shanahan to temper the expectations of Mostert in favor of saying Morris hasn't outright lost the job yet. They have history together. They probably even have a relationship together. They're almost the same age, for crying out loud. They're probably ping pong buddies or something. It's so weird to me that you got that dynamic now in the NFL where you got coaches who are younger than some of the players on the roster. And there still is always going to be that time-tested level of coach speak that you have to wade through as a fantasy analyst or a fantasy player. And I think this is clearly one of those cases. He just simply didn't want to put one of his long-term friends and players on blast and say, look, yeah, he sucks, sorry, lost the job. Because I think that's exactly what happened.
Lots of speculation there. Regardless, this is the Matt Breida show. Until something changes there, I'm avoiding this. Sure, if you want to go out and tuck Mostert away on your roster, deep if you have the spot for it, I just don't see him as dependable. What happens the next time he goes out there and fumbles on his first, second, third carry? Do you see Alfred Morris again? And then we go through this whole song and dance all over again? Quite possibly.
Sure,
and that's
maybe.
Why I say this is now a three-headed monster potential. And I don't want to have anything to do with the second and third heads when you just don't know what they're going to do any given possible week.
But
you
Kyle
can't
Shanahan,
depend on that.
Kyle, see, that's where I think you're totally wrong. Kyle Shanahan's experience that we've seen going back to Atlanta and even going back to at times when he was with Washington, he splits the backfield work. He's not crazy about giving one guy the workload.
Breida
is going to be that 1A, but I think Mostert's definitely way closer to 1B than Alfred Morris is at this point.
Well, I'm not disputing that.
Morris might not even be 4A at this point.
Maybe.
If there was not an injury concern with Breida, I would be really surprised if Morris was still on the team. You are right, though. Breida's the primary guy. I give you that. Breida's the primary guy to have on your fantasy team. He's the guy who shouldn't leave lineups at this point. Even if he gets 10 or 12 touches, he's still extremely efficient.
Oh, great. Especially in PPR. The guy can be very, very dangerous, and they're finding ways to make him more dangerous. So once he gets healthy, you're talking possibly a top 10, top 12 fantasy running back week in and week out. But again, my point is that secondary option might change play to play, game to game, and you can't go in depending on that. Drives you nuts. Kills your fantasy lineup. Get you a zero like you gave me last week.
Well, yeah, normally you're right in that situation. I think when you're talking about teams with four teams on a bye week, we're going to have six teams later this season. When you get into that area, you just also have the whole factor of attrition with running backs. They drop off the face of the earth every single week with injuries. I have zero problem if I'm in a dire situation to flex Mostert and I'd be mostly confident that he's going to get the majority of the work behind Breida. So we'll call that one agree to disagree.
I hope I play you the week you play him.
And I hope he goes crazy that week, which he probably will. One thing I do like about that situation is that you don't want him, so that means your black cloud won't kill him for us owners who are willing to take the chance. There's that, because you have this uncanny ability that every single up-and-coming player you draft, you just somehow murder. I don't know how that works, but so whatever.
Years and years of practice.
Yes. I mean, I don't really care too much at all about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a fantasy defense. They changed their defensive coordinator with the Mike Smith firing. I would think that since they've been as bad as they have, they can only get better. Am I underestimating the personnel situation? Maybe that's partly it. Is there one glaring weakness to this defense that you think gets changed? For me, it was simply very vanilla scheming. Mike Smith was playing defense like John Gruden's calling offense.
Ouch. Ow. They've been simply outmanned, outcoached, and outschemed. They're near the bottom of the league in sacks with 9 interceptions. They have just 1 pass yards. They've allowed just over 1,800 yards. There's not enough team speed, not talented enough to keep up with wide receivers, and quarterbacks can't even be touched by them. Not a good recipe. They can't get much worse because they're so close to the bottom, but I don't see them getting more than marginally better. They're still going to be a great defense to pick on for fantasy.
I have no argument with that part. I'm playing just about anybody and everybody I can against them, especially if the player is a tight end and if the player is a quarterback. Those two positions they've been especially bad at stopping. We're apparently running back heavy today. So Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen, the split has been not exactly what fantasy owners had hoped for. And it was kind of interesting to me because Cohen had been quiet early on. The last couple of weeks, he's really exploded. He's seeing a lot of work. I'm not sure he can hold up to that type of workload. But Jordan Howard, is it just a simple factor that he doesn't fit the system? And is there anything they can do to get him more involved and to make him more productive?
It's very one-dimensional right now for him, unfortunately. And he's almost at the point where he's touchdown dependent. He's still seeing double-digit touches almost every week. Biggest problem, that one touchdown on the season and hardly contributing anything in the passing game. Cohen seeing virtually all of those looks and still seeing 7-ish carries a game over the last 3. In a game against New England, your best defense is keeping the offense of the Patriots off the field. The better back in that equation is a plodding, grind-out game by Howard. I have to believe that that favors him this week to see close to 20 touches. If not, you're at the point where you really have to start thinking about sitting him down or, if you could, trade him away.
And Mitchell Trubisky. Trubisky has been wonderful. I didn't expect he would appear as a gunslinger in year two. I thought there'd be a lot of dinking and dunking. I thought this offense would run through Jordan Howard with some backfield pass work, and it would run through the tight end position with Trey Burton, which to some degree it has. But he's been really good on the outside. He's finding receivers downfield, finding rookie Anthony Miller down the field for a touchdown, finding Taylor Gabriel all over the field, and is showing a little bit of chemistry in the last couple weeks with 2 touchdowns by Allen Robinson. 9 TDs in the last 2 games, so there was the bye week, and they're splitting them up. Is Trubisky a QB1?
No, he's definitely bought into Matt Nagy's system, and he's getting more comfortable playing, and he's playing very smart football. Completion percent has been better than 71% the past 2 games, but he's not throwing a ton, Corey. So to use that term gunslinger, I wouldn't put him there right now. Look at his attempts and completions per week. He's getting a lot out of a little bit.
I'm not saying gunslinger like, okay, so Andrew Luck throws it 75 times a game, it seems like, every week now.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying volume. I'm saying he's taking shots. Usually inexperienced quarterbacks, especially in a new system, are timid to push the ball downfield. They're afraid to make mistakes. They're trying to take the safe outlet by going to these underneath routes to running backs and tight ends, taking the drag routes and the curl routes and things like that. They're not taking the ball and winging it 30 yards down the field like they're a seasoned veteran. And that's what he has been doing. And I'm surprised to see that. I'm not saying maybe gunslinger wasn't exactly the right terminology. It's probably conveying a perception that he was leading the team by throwing all day long. That's not where I was going with that. He's been extremely efficient, but he's not afraid to push the ball down the field. And that's something I didn't expect to see at least in year 2 from him.
He is way better than where I thought he would be, especially how the season started. But it's a real big litmus test this weekend with the Patriots. I'm expecting more turnovers than touchdowns. New England's going to throw things at him that the second-year pro has yet to see. And if they can't keep up offensively, it's going to be a long day for that Chicago offense.
I don't know that New England has the personnel to do that. I'm sorry. I think you're living in the past on that one. New England just simply doesn't have the defensive players to do it. They can't lay a hand on a quarterback. Their linebackers are still built like 1992, 275-pound linebackers in the middle of the field. Sorry, that doesn't get it done against quick guys. Taylor Gabriel across the middle of the field is going to burn that guy every single play. I don't have a lot of confidence that New England is capable of stopping this offense when push comes to shove.
Do not question Bill Belichick against young quarterbacks, ever.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I do, for the record, I did pick New England to win. I think they do pull out a fairly close victory. I don't see this being any kind of Patriots domination because they shut down the Chicago offense. An offense that I'm interested in watching because of the matchups. In the next four games, the Cleveland Browns face Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and Atlanta. That has to be the best possible schedule anyone could hope for a young quarterback trying to find his way with an offense that has actually, I don't want to say totally struggled, but they've been a little disappointing. He was so good in the first game and pretty good in the second game. Mayfield, and then we thought, all right, turning the corner here, we're going to see everything that the Browns organization saw in him when they picked him and made everybody gasp and go, Baker Mayfield, number one overall, what? We started to see it immediately, and then it's been a little rocky here and there. The game against the Chargers was really rocky. Comes out of it with an ankle injury. It looks like that shouldn't be a problem. The weaponry is what I'm concerned about. The receiving core banged up. He has found a connection with David Njoku, so that's helpful. Are you playing him in... Let's look at this in a vacuum here. Obviously, if you have an elite quarterback or probably even a better-than-average quarterback, you're likely to play that guy over Baker Mayfield. But him and then the other weapons that we're seeing in this offense, which guys do you like the most going forward is probably a better way of framing that.
The way I construct my teams, I'm never in a situation where I'd have to rely on playing Mayfield this week. Now, if I'm in a super flex two quarterback league, my one, my two is out this week due to a bye, due to injury. Mayfield has to be considered, not just this week, but against Pittsburgh, KC, and Atlanta too. Those are just beautiful matchups. Beyond him, Landry to me is still a weekly play as no less than a wide receiver three. He's still getting a large amount of targets with double digits in all but one game this year. Njoku, who you just mentioned, really has started the flash the last 2 weeks. And when you look at the lack of quality tight ends in the NFL this season for fantasy, he's in the conversation almost every week at this point as a start. Beyond that, I'm not getting too excited unless I'm really bit by bye week problems moving forward. Maybe I touch on a Callaway if he's healthy and I can get away with it. But nothing else excites me beyond Landry and Njoku right now.
I want to be excited about Callaway. I mean, 10
I
targets.
I do, too. He's got a lot of talent.
10 targets is awesome, but when you catch two passes, three passes, four passes, when that's all you can offer and you're dropping everything in sight, I don't think that's surprising in any way. I actually went back and forth with a reader in the summer, and he was constantly asking why I was so down on Callaway, and my primary reason was, look, the guy didn't even play college football last year. Jumping from taking a year off in college football and going straight into the NFL is such a monumental leap that you have to be a special player in so many ways to even consider that as being a realistic jump in my eyes. So anyway, Damian Ratley I thought was kind of interesting last week. Caught 6 of his 8 targets. Went for, I think, 14 PPR points. Not terrible. And that's probably because they've had so many other injuries at receiver. At some point, you know, he's a rookie himself. He's got to step up. I wonder if he has another good game, if he could in some ways overtake Callaway as being probably the wide receiver too. You saw some of that talk coming up with Rashard Higgins before he got hurt as he was ascending over Callaway and being given a little more responsibility by the coaching staff. I don't know that I'd be confident playing any of those guys outside of a wild flyer in DFS, but as you touched on with the bye weeks, if I'm desperate, I could see it. And I have a few teams that are desperate enough where that's, you know, those names are probably going to pop up on my waiver wire hunt.
Would you spend anything on those guys or are those like first come, first serve players?
Well, I mean, considering have Callaway in just about every league anyway.
Yes, desperate times do call for desperate measures.
I don't know. I stashed him early in so many leagues because I had the spot and I thought, you know, what do you have to lose? And he keeps flashing with enough targets where I'm like, can you really cut a guy that's getting 10 targets a game? And even if he's only catching a couple balls, at some point, I fear that it's going to click. And it seems like it's going to click like the week after you cut him. So depending on the situation, I would pay for both of those guys, but you're talking almost nothing. First come, first serve for Ratley is probably the far smarter choice. So we have that point in the show where we always look at individual players. And Joe Flacco versus New Orleans is one of the guys I've been kind of interested in. He just hasn't lived up to it the majority of the weeks this season. But when he's been on, he's been a rock-solid quarterback one. I think this week he can climb back up into that territory. What do you say?
Wrong. Unless you're desperate, I think the Saints beat him up a little bit this week.
Even with three quarterbacks on a bye, you don't like. So you got Russell Wilson, you got Aaron Rodgers on a bye, and you got Big Ben. You don't think that with those three quarterbacks out that Joe Flacco isn't at least a reasonable QB1?
16-team league, maybe.
What? Yo, you're nuts. You're nuts.
The Saints are coming off of a bye. They've had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. The defense is going to be better. The offense is playing incredibly well. If they get up with a two-score lead early on, they can tee off on that offense, which isn't very scary.
Yeah, coming off the bye is nice if you actually have a defense. That's helpful when you have players.
This year.
All right. Eric Ebron, our favorite guy, Eric Ebron. Okay, so he's he has the fifth best matchup for tight end efficiency. He has the best matchup for tight end receptions against Buffalo. He's still banged up. He's still finding the end zone. Are you taking the chance on him?
Words I never thought I would mutter in my life. Right now, you have to play Eric Ebron. If he's playing, you play him.
All right. Yeah, the two touchdowns, though, this is where I have to throw this in. The two touchdowns came from Kyle Rudolph and Jimmy Graham. Buffalo has done a really good job of holding down average tight ends. So if you believe that Eric Ebron is at least a Kyle Rudolph, yeah, I agree, then he's a must play. I'm personally fearful that the wheels are going to fall off. And these things usually happen when the matchup is good and you're encouraged to play a guy. You know how that works. So I think this.
Then rather than turning into a pumpkin, he turns back into Eric Ebron.
Yep. I'm going to get ahead of the curve and say this is the week where Eric Ebron turns back into Eric Ebron. I'm sitting him. Sony Michel versus Chicago.
Tough sledding in this one. I'm a big fan of Michel. Have him in a ton of leagues. I'm sitting him where I can, but that Chicago defense showed just enough holes in the running game last week to make me think that he could still go for 80 yards and a touchdown.
Reasonable. I think you have to play him just because of how good he's been, and only because New England loves to run when they get inside the red zone, especially when they're inside the five. A lot of teams get too cute with it. New England remains committed. They pound the ball, and they play smart football inside the five-yard line. That is the only way I'm saying he's playable. Definitely temper your expectations. Probably RB3 flex type guy. Wouldn't be crazy about playing him if I have better matchups with safer players.
But real quick on that, Corey, this feels a lot like one of those New England games where they come out and run six times in the entire game and Brady throws it 60 times.
Maybe. That to me comes down to Khalil Mack and his injury and how effective he is. If he's in Brady's face every play, they're not running it, they're not passing it 60 times.
I'm torn. It just feels like the classic Belichick style to just come out, tons of little short wide receiver screens, tight end dumps.
He did say Khalil Mack is no Lawrence Taylor this week, so when you get Bill Belichick to throw a little shade at a player publicly, that says something. So maybe you're onto something there. Maybe
he is right, though.
I'm not saying he isn't. I'm not sure you could say there is another Lawrence Taylor at all, ever. I really don't know that you could say that, but he's still an amazing pass rusher, and if he's healthy, he is a big problem. Because what have we seen historically with the Patriots? When Tom Brady doesn't have time to pass, he looks very average.
I'll give you that.
Sticking with that same game, on the other side of the coin, we touched on Jordan Howard a little bit. Let's get very specific. Does Jordan Howard deserve a fantasy start against the Patriots?
As I noted earlier, I think you play him, and this is his last opportunity to show you he's got a pulse.
I'm saying no. And the number one reason why is the Patriots, over the last 98 rushing attempts, have given up one touchdown. That's not how you beat the Patriots. And like we talked about earlier with this offense, I'm not scared about the Chicago passing game against the New England pass defense. Therefore, I'm committed to the idea that they don't run the ball more than absolutely necessary. And you're probably talking 60 yards at best out of Howard this week. Mike Williams jumped out of the gates really hot for fantasy owners to start the year. He was one of my favorite sleeper targets, got him in a lot of leagues. I thought I was really thought I really struck gold there. The last three games, not so much. Tennessee, are you going to stick it out and give him a shot, or has he burned you 3 weeks in a row and you don't want anything to do with him?
He's burned me two out of the three. He continues to be on the bench this weekend until he becomes a more vital part on a regular basis.
I'm going to play him only because the volume is still reasonably there. Tyrell Williams caught the two touchdowns, went over 100 yards last week, but he only caught three balls. I don't think Tyrell Williams, and I think he's underrated. I do think Tyrell Williams is an underrated player, but Mike Williams is still the better overall player. He was a highly drafted player. He has a tremendous amount of talent. Let's face it, he's basically a rookie. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's going to have some peaks and valleys, and I think we've seen that valley. I'll give him the three game as an understandable valley, and he's on the upward swing here. I am going to say he gets into the end zone, but we're probably talking only four or five catches tops.
Be a nice change of pace to see again.
Now, are there any guys that we didn't touch on that you are personally inclined to play?
I went to this well once earlier this year and regretted it, but I'm going to go back a second time. We threw some bleach in the water. The well is good again, right? Eli Manning against the Atlanta Falcons. Eli has to show he has a pulse. The pressure's on. Atlanta's D is terrible, giving up close to 1,000 yards so far over the last 3 weeks. League worst, 10 touchdowns in that time. I'm going to go for another long shot here, Corey. And it pains me to say this guy, too, because I did not like him entering the year, but Ronald Jones versus Cleveland. The Tampa Bay rookie has done next to nothing so far this year, has hardly even seen the field. He was inactive the first couple of weeks. That's spoken volumes, but this Cleveland D was just ripped to shreds last week. It's really now or never for Jones. Barber's just a guy. You've got a lot invested in Jones. It's time to get some return on that. And another rookie that I like to play this week, Tre'Quan Smith, New Orleans against Baltimore. Smith showed up really nice in that record-breaking game for the Saints before they went on a bye. I think that rookie's going to take that fire the week off, working with Breeze a little bit more, and turn that into sustained success. And his involvement will continue. Breeze has confidence in him. I look for him to score again this weekend. How about you?
Hey, that Ted Ginn injury probably can help you with that one. Josh Reynolds against San Francisco for the Rams. He's a wide receiver. They'll likely see a lot more work with Cooper Kupp out of action. Interested there, especially if you're dealing with some bye weeks, because there are quite a few quality fantasy receivers on a bye this week, if no one's noticed. And we're talking Mike Gesicki, rookie tight end for the Miami Dolphins. He's flashed just a little bit. He was really good in the offseason, looked really good in the offseason workouts and training camp, and I really was expecting he would be kind of a sleeper. I'm never big on rookie tight ends, but I thought he'd be a sleeper as far as rookie tight ends go. Detroit is awful against the position in their last four games. One out of every six catches has found the end zone. That's three times in the last four games. Ouch. And Charles Clay, I'm completely shocked Charles Clay hasn't been better than what we've seen, but we did see a little flash last week. We got six PPR points out of him, which feels like some type of victory or something. And
that matches season total.
And I think that since they're getting away from Nathan Peterman at quarterback and going to Derek Anderson, even with what is he at 9 or 10 days on the roster right now, we're still talking about a guy who's been around the block a couple of times. He's flashed a few times. There's enough of a safety valve feel there for me that I'm willing to take the chance. I am truly that desperate in two leagues where my options this week literally are Charles Clay and Mike Gesicki. And I thought, you know what? I've never in a million years thought I'd be debating which was the better play at week seven of this season. But here I am. I think they're both actually decent enough plays that I wish I could start both of them.
I hope you've bought enough beer for this weekend, because I think you're going to need to cry in a lot of it.
No, but I did apparently get 2,000 pounds of mail order grain sent to my house on accident. I like to homebrew.
On accident?
I like to homebrew, and I ordered some supplies in bulk, a couple hundred pounds of grain, and it turns out that the shipping company made a mistake and sent me 2,000 pounds of grain. So now I need to buy a silo.
I know winter is coming and all, man, but you don't have to totally Games of Thrones style this.
And the worst part is the truck driver said you have to haul it from the truck yourself. I said, what am I, a forklift?
I'm glad you didn't call me for that help.
No. So how can we help fantasy listeners over at The Huddle, Ryan?
Head over to thehuddle.com, use the code PODCAST18, get $10 off our already discounted remainder of the season, get award-winning rankings specifically for your league scoring system, all the waiver wire strong plays and strategy information you need to know going into each week. Again, that's PODCAST18, PODCAST18 at thehuddle.com for an extra $10 off our discounted rates.
It really is a good deal, and it's never too late to jump on that. Everybody needs a little help, especially if you're nearing the playoff push, and there are some leagues that you're in crunch time. You really are. You might be in that situation where you can only afford one more loss, and we're the team over here to help make sure that you don't have to suffer through another year without making the postseason. So for Ryan Benigni, I'm Corey Benigni. We're wishing you well in week number 7. Good luck.